Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Black Omniverse. This is Goddess Tara, also known as Seek Wisdom. Thank you for joining us today. It is Sunday, January 31st of 2010. Going to go ahead and give out our contact information for the Black Omniverse. You can visit our website, which is www.blackwombniverse.web.com, or email us at blackwomb@divinechemistry.com. And chemistry is spelled K-H-E-M-E-S-T-R-Y. Our toll-free number is 877-522-2653, extension 5. Pass. Very special guest coming on air today from Goddess Herstory. This is Sister Jennifer and Seifu, the unapologetic goddess worshiper. We are going to listen to some music briefly before we bring them on. While everyone comes on into the chat room, we will be right back.
Correct.
Welcome back, family, to the Black Womaniverse. I hope you enjoyed the song Strength, Courage, and Wisdom by our sister India Irie. I'm so excited to introduce my guest here today. From God is Herstory, we have Sister Jennifer and Brother Sehu, the unapologetic goddess worshiper. How are y'all doing today?
We're wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, we're absolutely great. Blessed.
That is great. That is great. Now, some of us haven't heard of you, so I'm going to start this off today by asking the two of you to kind of sort of let us know who you are, how you came to be on the path that you're on, and tell us a little bit about Goddess Herstory. And I guess we'll start with Sister Jennifer first.
Okay. It actually started for me when I first met Sehu back in 2006 at a venue where he was titled the Unapologetic Goddess Worshipper. And myself being in a primordial state with no current spiritual direction or path, I started to investigate, follow the brother around, realized he was lecturing, and was just totally enthralled by what I heard and just wanted to hear more. And a lot of transformation took place during our earlier encounters, a lot of rebirthing of myself, healing and connecting, and I saw that he had this beautiful message about women and our divinity and just began to look to assist him in his work and spreading his work. He's an independent scholar of feminine symbols and ancient matriarchal history and the mythos around the goddesses. And it's just been a wonderful experience. And in the beginning, it was just me and my three girls who endeavored to sit and study with him. So we'd come together under the moon, the full moon, and light our candles and sit and begin to, he would share with us what it was that it was all about, what we were all about and who we are. And from there, I realized that there were other women around me that were in need and wanting direction, wanting something to connect to and touch upon. And so I began to host circles on new and full moons and invite women out, and we'd study together. And it's just sort of evolved from there, just constantly giving birth to our visions, artistically putting on performances around the goddesses and songwriting, and it's just been a great work. It's been a great work.
Okay. And Sehu, how did you come to be on the path that you're on, and how did you acquire the name the Unapologetic Goddess Worshipper?
Well, that's interesting because I actually was raised Christianity. I'm the son of a minister and grandson of a minister, the grandnephew of a minister, cousins, etc., are all a part of that tradition that I grew up in. And there was always something about my looking at how women were presented in biblical scripture, and also how things were just very imbalanced with regard to how women were presented in spirituality. And so I began to can you hear me okay?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. And I just began to look at how things were imbalanced as a teenager, but on a lot of different levels. It wasn't until much later, you know, because of the misogyny, I guess, that is an undercurrent in so much of the Christian functioning. I actually saw my mother go through a whole lot of things in her relationship with my father for 14 years before she finally, you know, decided to leave that relationship. My mother had been, you know, a very strong part of nurturing not just my respect for women and a positive, healthy relationship with a woman, but she had also been a Sunday school teacher and a Bible teacher for me. And some of the stress of the relationship that she was in, along with, you know, of course, dietary things and lifestyle, contributed, unfortunately, to her early demise at about age 34 from cervical cancer. And I looked at that and the fact that so many of the women that I knew, you know, over the years after that, 8 out of 10 women that I know had some sort of womb issue. And some of my studies over that period pointed to the fact that the stresses of living as a woman in the Western world has been having an effect on the wombs of women and the health of our wombs, and so also the health of our nation, since we're all born from the womb. I began to question shortly after my mother's death. I was about 17, the authenticity of all the things that she had taught me, and I began to look more closely at biblical scripture and spirituality. And I read the Bible 6 times over and, you know, all these other things. I had my walks with other spiritual traditions, Buddhism, my practice of yoga, at one point Islam, and in particular Sufism. I found more of a resonation with what I hadn't quite identified as being this recognition of feminine divinity. The thing I think that began to wake me up to this process with feminine divinity for myself was looking at this whole relationship that I have with women, what I wanted it to be, and all of the things that I looked at that were lacking in that respect. And then I found out about the goddess many years after, you know, study of esotericism and you know, yeah, I just mentioned this long. After my studies of esotericism, I found that most of what is the basic foundations, not just of most world religions, but the esoteric doctrines are fundamentally structured and built on things that deal with feminine divinity, and that spirituality itself was given to men by women. You know, and it's the civilizing force of mankind. A man into a spiritual being and able to have the capacity to love and to build. And, you know, all of these things have been overlooked and downplayed from what I could see from my studies. And when I discovered my role in this as an artist, which is really my platform as a visual artist and a poet, I dedicated, you know, the working of my craft in the several disciplines that I work from towards this end. And that's been, you know, my journey now for the past 8 years. 8, 10, you know, it's hard to count sometimes. I could even say as far back as 13, but a real distinct walk has been the past 8 years. And I found a lot of resistance, interestingly enough, not just from men about this stance that I took about the feminine divinity as, you know, the essence of which we come from. Not just right. From men did I get resistance, but also, surprisingly, from women, who are some of the staunchest defenders of this patriarchal structure, unfortunately, simply due to ignorance and omission of their role. And so, you know, my stance as the unapologetic goddess worshiper is, you know, just it's a warning in a sense to those who have an issue with the fact that I take this stance. You know, just so you know who you're dealing with, I'm unapologetic in what it is I have to say, and I have the documentation, I have the wherewithal and the blessing of insight from the Great Mother. To point to those things in nature, you know, that she used in our creation and our coming into being as the basis of my unapologetic stance. I hope that answers your question.
Oh, it definitely does, definitely. I want to touch on the you mentioned the role of women, and I wanted to get Sister you, Jennifer, to speak on the role of women and certain things that are used at Goddess Herstory to kind of put us as creators of culture and language and things of that nature back where we need to be within, you know, our culture here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How important is that, and what tools and different things or rituals that are done to put Goddess back where she's supposed to be?
Wow. It's vitally important. And I was just thinking the other day about the old versus the new, and we won't ever again be what the past history is, but definitely taking the history and adding on to it and birthing anew who the modern day goddess is. That's one of my titles for myself, which is the modern day goddess. And who is she? Who is the new face of the goddess in this current culture, you know, in our current societies? And one of the things that I was just speaking about last night at our formal ritual with one of the brothers that was there is that I endeavor to show women their divinity. There is a lot going on with us mentally, emotionally, spiritually. There are a lot of dysfunctions in our community. Our states of being are in a very detrimental state. And the health of the women are a picture of the health of the world, I feel. And so I said to him, I said, you know, in the face of all that's going on and all of the issues and all of what's taking place with us, with women around the world, and of course, as a black woman, my first focus, but the misogyny of women is worldwide. And so my message is universal, and it's going to take all of us collectively, is that I don't seek to focus upon what is wrong and what are the dysfunctions, and let's come together and dwell upon that. I look to show divinity. I look to show it and be as much of an example of it as I can be, and to create visual artistic imagery around it via theater production, because we've done some of that through the songwriting that I do. And I feel like that's the first front to how we can transform ourselves, our state of mind, our imagery around ourselves, how we view ourselves, how we vision ourselves. We must begin to look at that and undo the misperceptions that we have around ourselves. So I bring the women together to, first of all, we must begin to reconnect to our spiritual selves. We're so spiritually disconnected right now. To just sit and quiet our minds, to sit and meditate, to sit and truly tap into the DNA that courses through our bodies, you know, that are truly the ancestral spirits, to reawaken our consciousness around our divinity, our divine selves, and the power of that and the responsibility of that as well. And so the spiritual work, our work is very steeped in a core practice that is centered around lunar yoga, also pranayama, meditation, things that elevate the consciousness and that stimulate the alchemy of the body, connecting to our womb, you know, and our sacred sexuality, because sex is taking place every minute of the day on the face of the planet in so many different ways, and the plant, the animal kingdom. And so our ideas around sexuality need to transform. They need to be reworked, you know, and how we view our sexuality. And to celebrate, you know, our moon rituals are around celebration. And some of what I do is very shamanistic, and just that I bring people together to celebrate and to dance and to chant and connect. I don't know how many people have seen the movie Avatar, but
oh yeah,
the scene where the natives are sitting at the foot of the rating, you know, in sync with one another and chanting. You know, for me, that was the epitome of what needs to take place amongst the women. Our wombs need to come together and vibrate simultaneously, reconnect, and that's when true transformation and change will start to happen, and to do away with fear, because a lot of us are very afraid. We're very afraid, and to study, to also show ourselves approved, as the Bible, you know, says. And so this is some of what takes place. Classes around the study of nature and how, as, you know, the feminine body, we are supposed to be very connected to the heartbeat of nature. We are, you know, the heartbeat of nature. We
right.
cycle with nature. And what does that mean? And manifestation in connection to that. Because women manifest everything that comes to the planet, whether we know
yes.
it or not, you see.
Right.
And to begin to make those connections, get a deeper understanding, and start to know that we are the primordial state of being. We are the origin of all things, and to get a comprehension around that in principle, you know, the feminine principle and relationship to the masculine principle, because I don't want people to think that this is some new feminist movement or it's a new women's lib. That's not what this is, or that it's exclusive of our counterparts, the masculine, because it's not. And just walking and creating in the moment. Sometimes I come to ritual and I'm like, okay, spirit is telling me don't structure. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's see what takes place, you know. And so that's some of what takes place.
All right. Can you speak to, like, the moon ritual? How important is it that we as women connect with the moon and the different phases of the moon and different energy that that is upon the earth during the different phases of the moon in terms of manifestation and sexual energy?
I think it's vitally important because it affects your state of being first and foremost. And the understanding of self is definitely tied to the phases of the moon. Last night's moon, although in the sign of Leo, energetically we noticed that the energy of the gathering was at a very low, laid-back sort of state of being. And for those of us who chart the moon, like we keep pocket astrology calendars, and for any given day when I see that there's a kind of energy going on and I can't really explain it, or my own state, mental state of being, my emotional state of being, is at odds with what is usually harmonious for me, I'll say, let me check and see what phase the moon is in. And my calendar gives little indications around what could possibly be taking place on a very human level. And it always speaks to, most of the time, correctly in terms of what I'm experiencing. If I'm in, you know, a state of being that's very closed, hard to emote or express. And so the moon is very, it affects our bodies. We are stars, you see. Aleister Crowley said every man and every woman is a star. Our bodies and this planet are contained of the same elements that the other planets, the moon, contains. And so we're affected by these energies. Everything is energy. Everything is energy. And so the understanding of that moon phase on just a very basic emotional state of being is one thing. Then you have your menstrual cycle. And for anyone that does any study around the moon cycle, that's our magic.
Uh-huh.
That's our magical time. You know, that's when you are the most intuitive. We're the most psychic.
Right.
And if you begin to pay attention, you start to see how there is guidance, more guidance than usual, available to you during that particular point in time. The ancient goddesses used to write the future based upon the cycles of the moon. There are archetypes associated with the different phases of the moon. And those archetypes are keys to what's going on energetically and what energy you can appeal to, not outside of yourself, because being a goddess worshiper is really worship of self.
Right.
But what energies are you appealing to inside of yourself? What is it that you can tap into for this particular period of time to manifest the objective? If it's an Oshun moon, for instance, what characteristics are there about Oshun? What does she like? You know, what are her offerings? What's the energy around that? And you can begin to see how you could wear that energy and give attention to it and feed it in yourself towards the working of the objectives that you set. There's planting and harvesting associated with the moon, and not just with the farmers. Women, they created astronomy and astrology and mathematics and all of these things based
on agriculture.
And agriculture,
yes,
based upon our moon cycles. So we're talking about something that's very foundational to our everyday state of being and functioning. You know, this body, this feminine body is magnificent. You know, it's magnificent. And if we could lend ourselves time to set aside to the study of it and the reconnecting to it, there's nothing we can't do. And our sexual energy is just sexual energy. And we were talking about this last night. It's one of my favorite subjects in particular. Because we don't understand the power of when you come together and you mate, there is energy generated through those passions, through, you know, that energy. And I tell people there's not a time that I don't come together with my mate that I waste my sexual energy. We waste our sexual energy. We think it's just all about pleasure. And there's pleasure to be had always. But
you know, if I could interject something here that's real interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're actually echoing in that hallway, so you may want to come back in here.
Okay. One of the observations that I made in my studies was that patriarchy took the whole idea of sacred feminine sexuality, and what they did was they demonized it. They made women feel ashamed of feeling, you know, any kind of inclinations towards sexual expression, and they relegated sexual energy and the use of sex to reducing women to breeders of children. And so we see them elevate what we call the white moon goddess, which is the mother goddess. And so, you know, you'll see a Mary, the mother of God, as the Catholics call her. But at the same time, in the divine triune family, the Trinity, she's relegated to being a ghost that comes and supposedly impregnates Mary in the form of a dove, which is actually one of the old forms of Venus, which is, you know, the goddess Aphrodite. It is Heteru, it is Oshun.
Exactly.
And so the sexual energy. But they what they did was they splintered the whole menstrual cycle, because the whole menstrual cycle is composed of menstruation and ovulation as opposite points on the wheel, and then also premenstruation and preovulation. And what they did was they gave a greater importance the ovulatory cycle, white goddess aspect, and they did away with the red moon goddess. I'm an initiate of the red tantras, and so the study of the menstrual cycle has been a part of my studies for at least the past 11 to 12 years. And what I found is that the menstrual cycle itself, you know, has an effect on human behavior and our response, you know, to the emission of the pheromones of the body, which you see in many of the ancient temples, the priestesses that conducted the rituals were called the Suvasinis, which mean the sweet-smelling ladies. And there were these wonderful things that they did with spices and herbs that enhanced the power of those very powerful feminine pheromones that actually took the celebrants of the ritual into deeper states of trance, deeper ability to actually affect what their objectives were. And because they did this cyclically, you see, it followed the same pattern that planting actual plants follows. Your intentions are like seeds, you know, and they need to be nurtured cyclically. But they demonized all the dark moon goddesses, all the ones that dealt with the menstrual cycle, and in fact, even demonized the menstrual cycle itself in women, which you see in Old Testament biblical scriptures and also in Islamic doctrine. Women are even separated in Islam from other women when they're menstruating. The power of the feminine spirit, you know, ritualistically, is that it negates anything else that's going on. Moon blood is more powerful than animal sacrifice. And so, you know, the institution of animal sacrifice by men was to substitute what it was that was already going on naturally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, stop. Repeat that again for those who didn't hear you the first time.
Yeah, I catch a lot of flack over this one. This is why I have to be unapologetic.
But it's true.
The sacrifice of animals was instituted to replace what happens ritualistically, the power of the menstrual cycle. It's interesting because what makes a woman oracular, you know, there was an esoteric writer, his name is escaping me right now, but he basically said that there is no magic without astrology. There is no oracle without astrology. And it's interesting because each night of the 28 nights that constitute the original month, not these 30 or 31 days we see in the solar calendar, each night is defined by one of the 12 signs, you know, and it passes through all 12 of these signs in a 28-day period, whereas the sun takes 365 days to pass through. The moon passes through all of these, and so gives like this expression of the entire zodiacal wheel and her cycle, and hence also women's changeability of mood and that kind of stuff. But
right,
the womb is oracular in that sense. They call it the zodiac, which, you know, comes from the root zu, which means animal, and dia, diac, circle, or circle of animals. And this references to the fact that the animating force of spirit, which is breath, essentially. You know, we do a whole class around how the breath animates our intentions, how it animates the body, you know, and, you know, I won't try to get into any of that deeper stuff, but the real animal sacrifice were these zodiacal expressions. And so hence, you know, the substitution of the blood of animals in this regard was an attempt by men to change or to take into their own hands the ability of having those expressions which were metaphorical. They weren't literal, and to take control of them. You know, men even dress in priestly robes that resemble the dress of women, to so-called fool the spirits, as one teacher said. So, you know, just looking at this whole thing with ovulation and menstruation in that regard is very informative for the person who wants to understand their menstrual cycle more, for men who want to understand their living with a woman, because, you know, we're affected by your cycle. And even from the time that we're children, I can still remember my mother's smell, even though she's been gone over 20 years. And part of this is because children walk around at waist level for the most part, and they're reaching for mommy's waist, you know, and so their head is right there. And so all of the ideas that we associate with motherhood, although they began with us in her womb, they extend to, you know, our growing up knee-high to her and being right where those very powerful pheromones emit. And, you know, the sense of smell being the oldest, it affects a lot of our moods and behaviors.
Yes, he is a moon man.
Now, the both of you mentioned oracle.
Yes.
Could you speak to the oracle and the importance of the oracle in our culture?
Yeah, it's funny. We almost can't discuss anything without giving a definition that's in context, or at least that speaks to the semantics and also, you know, the etymology of words. When we speak in this regard, the word oracle comes from the root word aura, to speak, and kle, which is the root of the word clef, or key, keys to speech. And so the oracle is like a syntheistic symbolic language that speaks to us on several different levels at once. And the keys themselves can be composed of visual imagery, experiential knowledge that we have of things in and as the world, because everything in and as the world is really the creator expressing herself, you know, through the creation itself. When a person creates a particular thing, often that thing takes on their name. Henry Ford's Model T Ford, for instance, was not the man himself, but it was an expression of an idea, a concept that the man had around what we now call an automobile. And so when we look at creation, we're really looking at the creator speaking to us. When occurrences happen and events unfold, you know, as we're walking down the street, that in and of itself is a reading. The experiences that a woman goes through in her daily walk of life, and really any human being, you know, are really oracular. The things that happen around us, the people that bring those things to us, the animals that cross our paths, or the objects, you know, because everything really is living. There's no real such thing as organic or inorganic in that sense. Everything is living and in a sense breathing. Metal has pores and breathes, you know. Stones have pores and they breathe. They expand and they contract with the cyclical cycles of the sun and moon.
Some of what that looks like from a very simplistic place is, and we do this all the time as women, we speak things and they happen without even realizing it. And one really good example is my ex-partner. In our parting, I said to him, be careful, because I foresaw that he would have a child, which he may not be particularly ready for. And sure enough, a year later, he called me up to tell me he's having a child. And then to really, really hone in on my prophecy of it, the baby was due on my birthday. You know, and so it plays out in these little moments, these visions that come to us as women, and we speak them, and we speak things into existence intentionally, or we speak from a very oracular place that is not something that we conjured or we thought up, but it came up and out of us, and so is. The movie Apocalypto, there's a scene where after the people have been captured and they're crossing the lands, this little girl who's there,
yes,
family's been decimated, begins to speak. And she is an oracle in that moment. And she speaks to them about what's going to go down, what's going to take place for them in the very near future. And I just thought that scene was so powerful and so indicative of how the oracle works. You know?
Yes. I would have to agree with you on that. I think that was, you know, one of the most influential moments in that movie.
Oh, yes.
Definitely. Now, Sehu, if you could speak on the role of patriarchy and how this has made a big impression as to why a lot of women are hesitant to accepting this goddess message and stepping into who they really are.
Well, I mean, some of this is quite simple. There is an attitude in most religious organizations and ideas and their scriptures that demonize and demonize women and their role in spirituality.
Starting with the Eve story.
Yes, you know, with the whole idea of women being the cause for, quote unquote, man's fall from grace, which is the way it's usually expressed, or humanity's fall into sin, we have this beginning of this stain upon the feminine expression. And then, you know, the most prominent figures of the Bible are either all whores like Jezebel or Mary Magdalene, who has to be defended by Jesus, otherwise she'll be stoned, or they are Mary, the mother of Jesus, who, you know, fits into that white goddess,
non-sexual
kind of image. This creation of the image also of the whore of Babylon, this idea that her indulgence, pleasure, is this evil and this wicked thing, is some of what we see biblically.
I just spoke about that today, and that reference in Revelation is about the queen of heaven and earth, the goddess Inanna, the Babylonian goddess Inanna. That's what that's referencing in the book of Revelation.
Also in other, you know, religions, we also see women taking, you know, either a secondary role to their male counterparts or just, you know, no recognition at all. In Hinduism, interesting, because it's a religion that's dominated by the presence of goddesses, and even, you know, some aspects of feminine worship are there. Of course, when the Aryans from the north came and began to take over the religious expressions and ideas and persecute those temples that practiced sacred sexuality and feminine divinity, they began to suppress a lot of this. And so you'll see writers of books who are supposed to be tantrists. And, you know, the concept of tantra is very feminine in its roots. The very meaning of the word tantra means to weave, which is another one of those womanly arts that that deals with not just the making of clothes, but the very weaving of life. In the Norse legend, you see Odin hanging from the tree of life, tree of Yggdrasil, and being drawn from his body, from the wound in his side, just like Jesus hanging on the cross, is this thread, and it's being drawn out by one of the forms of the triple goddess. It's being woven into a tapestry by the second, and it's being cut, representing the end of, you know, a human's life in the third. This idea that the body itself is sinful, you know, and the body itself is feminine in nature because it is a receptacle of spirit, and so that makes it feminine. But the body is described, you know, backing up now to Hindi cultures, as being this cesspool of filth and excrement by many of the ascetics of some of the Hindu doctrines. In Jewish Kabbalistic doctrine, the body is described as being, you know, again, this cesspool of filth and degeneracy. There is this downplay of the body, which is this wonderful, beautiful instrument that nature and creation has given to us. There's an attitude towards the feminine that begins with our physical experience here, that just can't be ignored, and it is part of the foundation of how patriarchal ideas in religion began to undermine many of the stances of what things were originally considered to be natural and not, you know, something evil or bad. And it's one of the ways that the goddess definitely was demonized.
And there's a lot of fear in connection to, particularly with the religions that have a system of do this or be punished. The whole concept around death and hell.
Yes, the punitive stuff.
That's a really deep, embedded psychological thing. And I find it interesting, this one brother said he couldn't worship Jesus hanging, this half-naked man hanging on the cross, because he wasn't attracted to men. And when he said it, I thought, wow, that makes such sense. And over the ages, you've seen that the churches have really been dominated in presence by women and them trying to get their husbands to come to church. And so our energy is very present there, and it's our energy is the engine that makes the church go, and yet we're suppressed sexually. My own experience is very early on around my sensuality and my sexuality dealt with me being persecuted by church women. You know, even though I tried to strip myself of makeup and earrings and dress myself at 22 like I was a spinster and, to, you know, fit in, because this was, my first official walk into spiritual practice, to discover that the women there saw me as a threat and that I had become literally the Mary Magdalene or the Jezebel, who, by the way, Jezebel, there's no reference of her being a whore in the writing. She's just a woman that knew how to wield political power. And any woman that has an independent nature or wields power is demonized. And so we're here, we're fueled with fear. Walking away from Christianity for me involved deep study that spanned from the age of 22 when I walked away from the church experience I had then, to studying, to searching and digging for what was the truth of these writings. And the last thing that I held on to, even when I looked at the Bible and realized it's a book of mythology, mm-hmm. it's not necessarily true. Some of the stories are written several hundred years after the figure Jesus lived, and all of these other things, the contradictions, the symbology, my last thread was the idea that the story of this man being crucified and dying for my sins had to be real, because how else am I going to be redeemed? How else am I going to get into heaven? And so the psychological fear and attachment, you know, we were very well indoctrinated and proselytized via this religion. And it's amazing because it's a formula that this country in particular uses when they go into lands that they're conquering. One of the first things they do is they send in the missionaries, because let's strip them of whatever it is their native beliefs are, and let's indoctrinate them with this. And it's almost like this spell that's been perpetuating and keeping us asleep and detached from ourselves, and women be silent in the church and learn from your husband at home, and, you know, all of these things. And it's really a deep bag. So I see women who sort of tip over here to this esoteric group, but on Sunday they still at the church.
Right.
You know, or they go over here and they study, you know, and they look into that, but they're right back at the church and they're worshiping God. I mean, say, who is my God? Men are gods in the making, you know, via their connectivity to the goddess.
Their initiation.
Yes, yes, exactly. But they're worshiping this masculine energy. And people need to stop and ask themselves, all of the energy that they're giving out in church via this particular deity, who is actually benefiting from that energy? What entity, what, you know, where is that energy going? And so they're putting out their energy here and not reverencing themselves, not celebrating their own energy, not seeing their own divinity. I had one pastor, the last pastor I sat under, who was very avant-garde, very, just very beyond his time, and that he attempted to introduce many trained schools of thought to the congregation. And he said to me, he said, isn't our faith enough for the women? And I said, no. Because he sees them going over to Queen of Fool or this camp or that one. And I said, no. And there are no images of us at the head of things. We're subjects, you know.
Right.
We're created as help for Adam.
Right. And it's up to us to create these things, too, that show us in as the head of things, organizations, culture, so-called religions, things of that nature. We need to create that image for ourselves.
Yeah.
Around divinity, because divinity in the minds of people seems to equal non-human. I mean, here people view the figure of Jesus, for instance, or Buddha or Krishna as being other than men,
right?
Other than human, you know. And so,
yes, they call them he.
Right. So a lot of us don't even equate divinity in connection to humanity,
and definitely
right.
not femininity.
Now,
and definitely
a,
not femininity, yeah.
There's a
you
question
know,
in the chat room briefly about, because you posed the question of who's benefiting from this energy that the women are bringing with the services that they're doing in these churches. And the question is, I guess directed to say who, how did you benefit, not necessarily directed toward church, but just in society as a whole, how did you benefit from patriarchy and how men benefit then is how, hold on, let me try to get this question straight. How did you benefit and how did you see that patriarchy was actually oppressive and how did you change your behavior to uplift women instead of expecting their services?
Well, you know, it's interesting that this question is asked. Men are often placed at the head of things simply because they're male, and that's because there's an acceptance of this idea that maleness is preeminent and that it's first, which is a farce. Once I got it very clear, you know, that even in the womb, for instance, you know, men are feminine. It's not until almost the first trimester is done, halfway through the third month of the first trimester, that we even begin to take on any attributes that represent maleness. And this happens because whatever determining factor that your genetic dispensation has begins this process of the brain releasing those male hormones that constitute the clitoris becoming more enlarged. You understand? And the testes or the gonadal system developing, because women, the gonads are the ovaries. And they're inside because they need to be kept warm. Men's mechanism works a little differently, and our external nature demands that our reproductive system has its gonads outside because, you know, for the health of men, they have to be cooler. The way that men have benefited, I know I hop around quite a bit. My studies take me through several different disciplines, which include biology, anthropology, of course, spiritual ideas, which, you know, are kind of anthropological as well. And I'm, you know, a whole host of others. But my point is that there is this fight inside of the body that begins to happen as soon as these male hormones, and particularly androgen, the root of the word androgen is the root of what, you know, male is or man is. Even though we associate it with androgyny and sexlessness, now in its colloquial meaning. But there's this fight that happens in the human body against all the things that make it overtly feminine. And I believe that this kind of physiological beginning has translated because men are younger from an evolutionary standpoint. And we see it even in the way that boys and girls, you know, grow up, girls develop physiologically faster than boys. Than boys.
So we're talking about parthenogenesis?
We're talking about parthenogenesis and, you know, the idea that at one time women did not actually need to be seated by men because there were none.
Okay.
And you see this aspect. Yeah, I know, it's a lot. Yeah?
Oh, no, this is not new to me, and it's not new to some of my listeners. But see,
okay,
when we touch on things like this, they need to be highlighted because people need to understand that we actually need to sit down and have a class about biology and genetics and how a fetus is formed and what things such as fibroids are.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So
underdeveloped fetuses.
There you go.
And if you go back, for me, I like to delve into, like, our non-physical primordial origins. And so even when people look at that opening passage about, you know, the water and God spoke and, you know, femininity, the feminine principle is the substance from which all things come from and are manifested. The masculine principle is an expression that became manifest from the original primordial waters, which is basically the, you know, the universal womb, the cosmos, the womb of the cosmos is.
And it was created to carry out what that original intention and will was in an external manner, to affect matter from the outside. I want to make sure that we answer the listener's question, how have I benefited from patriarchy and its benefits to men on a social level. There is an old boys network that advances itself. When we use a word like chauvinism, you know, chauvinism really means patriotism. And so when you say male chauvinist, you're talking about someone who is geared towards their particular gender, you know, but anyone can be a chauvinist of any kind of type. The whole point here is that men saw that there was this preeminence originally, and whether we know it historically or historically, if you will, or not, it's still very much steeped in the way that men behave. They felt like they had to get an upper hand over women in order to be able to have control of the world, because at one time everything was passed not from father to son, but from mother to daughter in many of these ancient societies and whatnot, as it should be. You know, men are physically stronger than women, and the balance of the social order and politics under matriarchy was such that women controlled how the babies would eat. And this is the way that it should be. Women care more about not just the babies and how they will eat, but their husbands. Men care about competition more so, because there's an aggressiveness in the male ego to distinguish itself and to, you know, divide things. And so it operates in a way of competitiveness. Under matriarchy, you know, as I said, inheritance was passed from mother to daughter. You see this most prominently in probably one of the most patriarchal cultures now, which is, you know, on the Arabian Peninsula. At one time, in Arabia, a woman could turn her tent towards the setting sun, and her husband couldn't enter because she owned the tent. You understand? Prophet Muhammad of Arabia was employed by his wife to watch her cattle. Those were not his livestock. They were hers. She owned them, you see. The Kaaba itself was built by women. Muhammad's mother and his wife, Khadija, were both priestesses of that shrine when it was under the control of women. How I benefited was, of course, there was always this pushing of me, because I was a male, to the forefront of things. That's just kind of how things go in this society. There's this expectation for a long time, you know, when we were growing up, we were in our 40s. Jennifer actually is 20, though. You know, this is what she always tells everyone. There is this expectation that men will be the doctor. Men will be president. Men will be, you know, at the forefront. And there's this idea that women, because of, you know, such a thing as their menstrual cycle, don't have the emotional capacity to handle the stressors of this kind of leadership. It requires, you know, a manly touch, a manly hand. So men took by force, which is what Muhammad did. You know, he couldn't get these people that were in the Arabian Peninsula to give up their love of the goddess, because it was a matriarchal country. The benefits that I've gotten and that every man has gotten, men like Muhammad, etc., is that there is this ability to simply say that you're supposed to be at the head, or forcibly insert yourself at the head. That seems to be acceptable, and women acquiesce to it. I watched my mother acquiesce to it growing up. I've watched even in past relationships of my own, and I took issue with it because I didn't quite understand what my conflict was. But there was this expectation that I'm supposed to be the one that's in charge, even if I didn't always feel adequately enough to be up at the forefront. Once I learned better, what I found myself doing was accepting the fact that my partner is, you know, in many instances, not just my equal, but actually a superior to particular tasks that will help us to catapult ourselves forward. Women are better managers than men. They organize things better than men do. And if men would humble themselves and acknowledge this fact and not look at their own ideas as being challenged, if a woman comes to you with a better way of doing something, to not only accept what it is that she's suggesting to you, but perhaps in some of the circumstances and scenarios, maybe you need to step aside and support her and push her out front.
Especially when she's the oracle.
Yes. And so in our rituals, I mean, you know, it's probably, you know, very clear that, you know, because Jennifer has made it such that she got introduced to the idea of the goddess being me. But I see her as much as being my teacher as, you know, any of the teachers that I've had before, the best of which, I'm going to have to also say this, were all women. But I see her very much as my teacher as well. So, you know, this attitude that men have to begin to adopt is this acceptance that there is a switching of the guard that's situational. You know, we have to become partners in our process and not competitors.
All right, I'm going to pose one question before we go on break briefly. That question is in the chat room. How do they make the shift to humble themselves, and this question is regards to men, if they have no knowledge of her as goddess?
That they have to be taught, and that's exactly what we're here for the process of doing.
Some men have a natural inclination and orientation, but are just awaiting a teacher, not even knowingly. Because I told my daughters, I said, you know, in their late teens, I was like, wow, I don't know who you guys are going to marry, because I raised them from a very organic place. So some homeschooling. So they were very different, very advanced in their spiritual disposition. But they have both found young men whose orientation was one of worship and veneration. You know, and there to be of service. And then the gaining of the knowledge around alchemy and the history and, you know, all of the other things. So some of them have a natural inclination and just have not been fully awakened. Some men I feel like are going to have to be slain. And that's just from a dark goddess perspective.
But you're right.
You're going to have to slay them. And
but
let them
right.
rebirth themselves in the next incarnation, and hopefully they'll.
But you know, in matriarchy, one of the ways that women literally would do this, though, you know, was not necessarily castration, although we've had that presented in history. But women would, because a woman determined who her mate was going to be and who she produced children from, very different than now. And so these men with excessive aggressive behaviors will weed it out because the women did not mate with them. You understand? So these groups of men, these bands of men that felt ostracized, began to, you know, in their being considered kind of outside of the community, because once you're unable to mate by a certain age, you know, you're frowned upon in many of the ancient societies. So these men became outriders, and they began to run in packs and herds and hordes, and they looked at the man who was the chosen mate of the queen mother sitting next to her on the throne, and they began to despise him. And so they took the things that they learned from the hunt with the trapping and killing of animals, and they began to apply this to other men in their competitive nature, and they began to attack the choice of the matriarch who sat on the throne. And this is how some of the war machinery of patriarchy actually began. And, you know, you see it in almost every culture.
But I think if the same question can be applied to women in terms of them awakening to embracing becoming the goddess. And I think it's really all centered around conscious states of being. It's our consciousness, you know, and how can we evolve consciousness? So.
All right, we're going to go ahead and go on break for a brief moment. And we will be right back because I want to touch on relationships and the importance of spreading this sacred information about the goddess and the divine feminine. So we will be right back with that.
Okay.
Microphone controller. I was in the womb with this. Now I'm seconds older.
Hey.
You busy comparing me like I need comparison. How you gonna fuck with this? Caleb in the air, I'm in.
Hey.
People, can you hear me now? No fairly gotcha. I am just a messenger bringing you something very fertile. Yup, in your future, the epitome of womanhood is the one that suits ya.
Hey.
I came to the stage with the doom doom, motivated by the light, sight, and the dynamite. Pray about it all the time, so it's coming naturally. Got a couple master teachers say I reach the half of me, so I've been working on me happily. Cause there's a mission and a plan at this position. Hoping and praying,
I hope everyone enjoyed that song by Jill Scott, Breathe.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Love me some Jill.
So, oh, yeah. I love Jill. I love Jill Scott. Before we get into the topic of relationships, I want to touch on the divine feminine, the fact that when you take a look around, I'm young. I'm 28 years old, and I've come into this information I've come into this information very young for a person who was not raised in this.
Wonderful.
My mother did not know this. You know, when I look at how my mother handled things, it was totally opposite of where my thought was and where my spirit was, even as young as 3 or 4 years old, just watching some of the things she did I just didn't agree with. So I've had this spirit about me ever since I was young. But I just came into the full knowledge of everything, actually knowing and living this way within the past, I would say, 2 to 3 years. So in looking at this this shift that's going on, there's a conscious rising of the divine feminine and the energy and the shift that the earth is making. Why must we teach this information, and what is at stake if we resist this resist teaching this to our people and to our children?
I feel like first and foremost, our very lives are at stake because the feminine principle and what that means inherently, you know, when Sehu mentioned that masculinity is very linear, femininity is let the circle be unbroken. And women are about the perpetuation of life. That's what the divine feminine is about, the perpetuation of things. And its expression is evident in all of creation. And right now, the planet itself is in a very Kali state of being. And if we don't begin to return to reawaken, reconnect to this state of being, this let the circle be unbroken, I don't know how much longer we're going to, and I don't want to do apocalyptic, but there will be a reckoning. There is going to be a death and a rebirth, regardless. Our states of being are just in, spiritually are in a critical at a critical point, and the divine feminine, I feel, will bring us back into harmony with one another as men and women in relationship to our environment, the planet, everything from a very holistic perspective. I think is very dependent upon that, not just from our social level, but on a very microcosmic, macrocosmic level.
The corrections that need to be made are so crucial, as Astarte was pointing out, that if we don't make this shift, we're going to be forced to make a shift. You know, she used the statement that a death is going to occur, and, you know, it's not necessarily in the worst way. We can actually choose what death looks like. It's a part of the process of initiation. It's a part of the process of life. You know, the ancient Chaldeans, the Egyptians, had no word for death, but called it repeating life, which points to this fact that they understand that the circle is unbroken and that life is a process of the germination of the seed in the womb, that it is a progression of its growth to give itself roots to take hold, leaves and stems, you know, so that it can fully develop and grow and bud, you know, next, and then flower, and then fruit. But then there's a process where the fruit ripens, and that's decay. The sweetness of life is, you know, in its preciousness, in that there is a kind of permanent impermanence, that things come into existence and grow and develop, and then there's a retrogressive period. But within that retrogressive period, in the fruit ripening, in the fruit actually decaying, there are more seeds. And regeneration, you know, Demetra George, in her book Mysteries of the Dark Moon, says that we shouldn't look at patriarchy from this perspective, which really gives them all the power, that they came and they destroyed and they tore up. No, it was time for the cycle of the nature of change to take place. And now, again, is the reawakening of the goddess. And so right before our eyes, we see this decay of patriarchy. That despite itself, despite its scurrying around to try to hold on to power, and even sometimes trying to co-opt goddess energy, how it presents things in advertising and in what they decide to release by way of the new movie or what they decide to call this next new gadget, they'll use goddess names and et cetera, trying to ride the energy through and keep themselves, you know, still here. But the nature of things is that everything must change. This is why oracles deal with the nature of how things transition and they change. And so if we are to read the signs, you know, we see now is the time of the reawakening of the goddess. It's imminent, and it's in front of our eyes.
And we're already seeing the results of not having function from a more balanced state right now. We're already in the throes of it. So now it's a matter of, how, as he said, will the change occur? Will the death and rebirth happen? And will it be a violent labor, or will it be one that is much smoother, you know, in our transitioning? Who's going to fight against it? Who's not going to fight against it? I think
don't
inevitably
fight against contractions. If you allow your body to flow with it, you can just burn everything.
Yes.
Just let it flow.
Just breathe. So we're just breathing.
Just breathe.
You know, it's funny because In most ancient times, although there was this preeminence of the goddess, there was this understanding that we worshipped each other. That's the divine nature of relationship.
Yes.
You see, so the god existed understanding that he was the son of the mother. You see, and so sometimes you'll see these presentations that the Western world gives of historical figures like Nimrod, for instance, saying that he married his mother. But there is this understanding that every woman is the great mother. She's an expression of that. And also that the matriarchal line is associated with being our mother and connected to the earth. And so to marry one's mother is to marry the earth, to marry your origins. You know, Egyptian kings were said to be kings only due to the fact that they ascended upon their mother's lap, which is, you know, the name of the throne. Matriarchal bloodline. Ast or Aset is the seat or throne. And so, you know.
The image of the sun, but they made it more about the sun.
Yes.
It's woven more to be about the sun, and you see that in the Christian doctrine, it became more about him.
Right.
But even he, upon his death, references the mother and points and says, yes, you know.
Yeah, and the old saying.
Mother.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. The old saying, mama's baby, papa's maybe, is
mm-hmm.
a point to the fact that matriarchal bloodline is the identification of the family of every individual. You know.
Yeah, the Nityama, Shantan Nityama, who's a well-known tantric mongu, said that in one of his recordings, there was a time where there wasn't even a word for father.
Yeah.
He said the closest word was uncle because you knew that your father was in there somewhere.
And that's why in a lot of homes, a lot of women will introduce their mate to the children as this is Uncle So-and-so.
Yes.
People need to stop playing and do their research, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
things
don't come out of
a
vacuum. Yes.
I mean, this is uncle, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Uncles everywhere.
Yes.
And
yes.
Not that the men were not present because
right.
the community took care of the children, but the women, they were the ones that made, sure of everything that was needed for the children. And the men were there present to watch the gate to make sure that the lands were tilled and to do what it is that, I mean, men have a monopoly on physical strength and not,
I just want to share something with you that's in the chat room. One of my elders, Pastor Flower, she says, father is fed her. It's a pregnant woman.
Yes, it is. You know, it's interesting. Dr. Maladoma Patrice Somme, in describing, you know, his own culture and his own shamanic tradition, says that the identification of one's matriarchal uncle is that he's called your male mother. I mean, and so... You know, your matriarchal uncle not only, you know, was your strongest identification, you know, there, of course, was respect also for the patriarchal line, but the strongest connection, because nurturing is our strongest connection to living as human beings and being human. But male mother is the connotation that's used within his tradition with regards to, you know, your mother's brother. And so, you know, there's this idea somehow sometimes that, you know, when you speak of, you know, the African male from the oldest traditional, you know, ideas, that there's always this image of the Mandingo, the very machismo kind of energy and whatnot. But, you know, my experience with people coming, you know, from throughout the diaspora, that there are these elements of this identification of the male with the softer, gentler, feminine side that's also contained within the masculine. We must have and we must maintain a balance of these two in order to create balanced children.
Yeah, and not only that, for the male to evolve spiritually, he must tap into the feminine because that's
yes.
where the intuitive is, you know, that going
yes.
internal, you know, that process is a very feminine one and he must return to that. And in the Essenic doctrines, the character known as Jesus, in one of their writings in my studies, he said to the men questioning him, he said, I am a woman internally. And they said, well, if you're a woman, why weren't you born as one? And he said, well, for this time period, for the work he had to do, had he been born a female physically, he would not have been able to move about as freely. but and then began to teach on the right-hand path and the left-hand path. And so when I look at Sehu, he is very much in this incarnation, born physically masculine, but very, very connected to and attuned to his feminine self, you know.
Yes. I want to speak, I want you, the both of you to speak on, again, biology, genetics, and science. I was looking at a video of you, Sehu, where you were speaking, when you were showing your artwork, and
yes.
You alluded to the earliest Homo sapiens were female. Could you expound on that and give us a little bit of information regarding that and the reference you made to, well, I'm pretty sure you'll get into what I want to hear. Go ahead and expound on that for me.
Sure. First, let me say that all life is one, which means that everything is interconnected. Mineral life, plant life, animal life, and human life all pulsate as one. We come from the same source of original essence, which is undifferentiated, which takes these shapes and forms that make these different bodies and biologies so that we can look at what we see in creation, the great oracle, the universe, the one statement that speaks all the time, and see what is the true nature of our origins, our functioning, and our being. Within both the plant and the animal kingdom, and particularly with amphibians in the animal kingdom, frogs specifically, frogs go from being male and female during the course of their lives. They switch back and forth between sexes depending on whether they're laying eggs. You understand? With plants, there are plants that bear both seeds and are feminine. And so there is this presence of this idea of parthenogenesis, which we mentioned earlier, that is a part of nature and creation. That original essence that everything came out of is a darkness, an undifferentiated womb upon which the potential for everything to be existed. And the spirit of the Great Mother, so says some of the oldest texts, brooded over just as we see a duck brooding over, you know, its eggs before they're hatched. And the world soul is shown as this big egg that's wrapped around by this serpent, you know, one of the most powerful emblems of alchemy. Our origin into the world is foundationally feminine. The forms that we have, as we talked about, you know, up until almost the third trimester, were all feminine. Is a part of our genetic, biological breakdown, our origins in the world. And so if we look to what nature says about the way it unfolds itself, you know, the truth of our feminine origins is a very apparent and very loudly spoken truth if we listen. The study of how all life evolves, you know, is definitely, you know, a matter that needs to be addressed because, you know, a controversy has been pitched over the years about evolution. Evolution doesn't necessitate that you are an atheist or that you are even agnostic. Just that you observe the process by which divinity creates. And that way that divinity creates is the same way I create as an artist. I start with a blank mind and raw materials that are essentially by their function no thing. And something emerges out of that with the process of movement. And this is what biology does. This is what nature does. A single cell organism divides itself into identical daughter cells. And, you know, the idea with parthenogenesis is the female form kept reproducing itself over and over again. But with migration, some characteristics and features began to shift because of, you know, climate or just, you know, what human individuals engage themselves in. And so parts of us became more developed. The desire to have that gene pool be able to cross and to get these better, characteristics in phenotype and genotype created an urge. And if you know anything about the way the universe creates based on desire. That's magic. A desire to create a means of crossbreeding created what we now call, you know, the male.
A need to perpetuate this.
that the need to perpetuate the species with particular characteristics in form and in function. That's nature. That's how nature operates. It wastes nothing, and it always seeks ways to resolve itself, whether that's by, you know, the seed in the womb germinating and running wild and creating a mutation, which is a change, or whether it is through, you know, the cross pollination of certain plant species, et cetera. So it's just a wonderful world of endless possibility, and we can take hold of it, and we, in fact, have it in hand.
All right. I'm going to shift for a moment, and I'm going to go ahead and give the call-in number out because we have several people in the chat room and several people online listening, and people also on Facebook and other websites listening. Our call-in number is 646-716-7675. Press 1. That way I'll know if you have a question or a comment. I'm going to shift our conversation over to relationships. Jennifer, what can you say to the sisters who are looking for sacred males? What do they need to do to prepare themselves for that type of sacred union?
Well, what I could do is I could just share my story and my learning from that, which essentially encompassed healing. Healing from past traumas, because we go into relationships carrying a lot of what has been experienced in the past. And for the most part, most of us don't have a real true sense of self. We don't really truly know ourselves or our true inclinations. And so delving into yourself would be the first thing that I would say, because my leading up to my meeting, Say Who, dealt with me delving into my spiritual self, coming to a pivotal point in a death and a transformation that took place and that prepared me to fully receive. You have to become an empty cup. And so I had emptied quite a bit of myself, resolved some things, went through a process of death, because in order to awaken your feminine divinity, for me to be worshiping something outside of myself, that didn't make room. You know, there was no room for that. At the end of my process, I was left with, well, who do I worship now? You know, and Say Who gave me. But I went through this purging, this evolutionary experience. And then in my encountering him, I began to tap into what was going on with me sexually. And this is a major, major thing within our community. Sexuality, we have major blockages around it, major issues. Most of us are looking for a man. We're looking for the one made for us, you know, one who's going to be our everything. But from my experiences and my studies with Say Who, there were, under matriarchy, monogamy was not the spice of the day. And so when I met Say Who, I was in a relationship, and from that exchange between these two people, I realized that I am more polyandrous. And the partner that I was with at that time, I began to be able to identify that he had a proclivity towards polygamy. So you have to begin to really start to figure out, who are you really? Who are you? You know, on the inside, the part of you that you don't look at, the shadow self, that's who the dark goddesses are. In many instances, our shadow selves. And our ideas around what relationship means, how they're defined. We're looking for monogamy when quite possibly you may not even yourself be monogamous. Or you're trying to mate with someone who is not monogamous. Under matriarchy, there was polygamy, there's polyandry,
Since we're on this topic, let's break it down what these words mean so our listeners understand what these words mean. What is polygamy, what is polyandry, and what is polygyny?
For the most part, we know that polygamy, as it exists today, is the male's right under particularly the Islam in the Islamic community to have or take more than one wife. Okay? Under matriarchy, polygamy existed very differently. Women controlled polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
And the polygamous household consisted of women who had decided amongst themselves that they wanted to share this communal household together. So it wasn't about the male. Maybe I married him for love. Maybe you married him because you needed someone to work your vineyard. Maybe this woman married him because she may not require a sexual relationship, but maybe she required, you know, safety, and she wanted to be a part of the community. And the women in the polygamous household made pacts amongst themselves around the children and the care of them. And if something happened with me, that they had these mothers to give care to them and safety. So it was very, very different. And not only that, the marriage did not mean ownership. We have some deep power, control, ownership issues in our current ways of functioning around relationships. I may have married him, but I was free to love whom I chose as he was. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
It was not about, see, monogamy today basically means foundationally
ownership.
Just the nitty-gritty ownership of sex. It's an agreement that says, I'm not going to give my sex to anyone else, and you're not going to give your sex to anyone else. And we've seen that it doesn't work.
No.
We've seen that, you know, we marry and the marriages aren't lasting, and we're not really understanding why. And for the most part, we don't really know ourselves. You know, we're not really paying attention to ourselves, giving study to self. So self-development, healing, study of self. Polyamory is people who just love people, basically. People who just love people, and the people are loving the people. And none of these work unless everyone involved genuinely loves each other. Polyandry is the woman, like myself, who has a proclivity towards more than one partner, more than one husband. I didn't know this about my nature until I met Sehu. And when I had to go back over the course of my life to affect my healing around my sexuality and identify the moments that were painful and the things that I was carrying in my womb, I realized that my pattern had been a different dispensations of spiritual growth in my life, two men simultaneously, at very pivotal transformational points. And when I saw that, it stunned me because I just had no idea. And here I was yet again in another scenario with a current mate and a new mate coming into my life with my whole spiritual path contained in him. And what was I going to do? You know, so these are some of the lessons that I got during my experience, during my walk, emptying myself, healing myself, rectifying myself issues, you know, loving myself more. You can't attract a man to worship you if you don't worship yourself. And some of the things that Sehu said to me originally when I had just met him and did a reading was, love yourself where you're at. Love your body where you're at. If you want a particular kind of mate, he told me, go sit down and write down all the attributes you want in your mate, because very early on, I thought my encounter of him was to help me to have a deeper connection to my current mate, until I realized my encounter of him was about me. And so I sat down and I thought about these attributes, and he said, when you write them down, cultivate them in yourself. You see, you can't attract all these things you want in the other guy if you yourself are not trying to live and be those attributes. And I said to another sister on another show, when you encounter a matriarchal man, he is very, very different. And this is what the sisters are asking for. They want to attract a matriarchal man. First of all, say who's lived in different situations. He's lived under polygamy. He's lived under polyandry. And he lives without ownership, without binding, without restriction. All the usual things that we have that we take into our relationships because we think by this controlling this person that we're going to feel more secure. But security
right.
comes from inside, you see. And the whole ideal around how we
liberation
feel about
liberation has to start in the home and in the family setting. And you can't have
yeah.
freedom if you don't have your lifestyle in a way that you don't feel as though someone owns you or you own someone else.
That's right.
Yeah. You have to be. I began to so love and appreciate myself more, you see. So, and then I realized that to live in monogamy was such work. You know, it's rare that two people come together under monogamy and live and share their entire lives together. My relationship with Sehu looks very monogamous, but there is freedom. You see, there's no restriction. There is, you know, there's not all this other bag. My consciousness around it is very, very different now. And then comes the understanding of, well, if I do encounter another male energy, what is the purpose of these encounters? And it may not be for a lifetime. There's no one person that is your everything. You know, you shouldn't want one person to be your everything. And under monogamy, a lot of what happens is that our relationships begin to stagnate. The energy stagnates. It doesn't move and it doesn't grow. And we don't recognize when the time period with that person has come to a close. And it's very hard, you know. It's a difficult process. And so if we can begin to get in touch with ourselves, to know ourselves, you know, encountering, say, who is a matriarchal man, here was a man who, you know, I said with this other sister show, I said he laid down his sword and shield at my feet. And we say we want an emotional man. We say we want a man that's in touch with himself and can communicate and all these other things. But we have sort of double standards with us as well in that we sort of victimize the man who has a softer touch, who is more in touch with his emotions and his feminine. And what are our ideas around what a real man is? What are our ideas around what a goddess-centered male is? You know, how do you feel about a man who is able to emote just as well as you? You know, we ourselves have been so affected by a patriarch and how we view what a man should be. And I think we need to start to redefine what it means to be who we are as female and what that matriarchal masculine should look like, what that really is. So, you know, that's just some of what my experiences have been. And until we begin to do the self-process, you'll continue to attract what it is you're not wanting. Some of us are attracting dominant men because we're constantly acquiescing our power and control, you know. And you want to attract someone that is worshipful, that reveres and reverences. But that's a great responsibility when someone brings to you and lays down their themselves at your feet. And that's a lot of his power. And so what are you going to do? How are you going to react? What kind of woman are you going to be in that moment? You know, are you going to take his power and use it against him? You know, are you going to deal with him? Human nature is such that when someone else hands over power or what appears to be a handing over of power, we tend to abuse, you know, and that's something that you don't want. You don't want to do. You don't want to begin to become what it is that you've seen in the other men that you've had relationships with. When you do meet the male who is more than confident in himself and able to bow his knee to you as the goddess, so, you know, that's just my take on some of it.
Okay, we have a caller on the switchboard. I still have some more questions, but I don't want to make the caller wait too long.
Okay.
Area code 661, could you let us know who you are and where you're calling from?
Hi, my name is Kim, and I just had a question. These various terms that you're speaking of, like the matriotic man, where on the Internet would I be able to find that and just see the various definitions and the various...
of the matriarchal man?
Yeah, like...
Well, I'm not certain that you will find anything on the Internet. I think these are terms that are constantly evolving, goddess-centered male. I myself have not encountered. What I am starting to encounter are on, like, the YouTube sites or some of the Facebook sites. There's a brother called Majidi Barati in
Majidi Barati.
North Carolina. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Sorry if he's listening, but we just recently encountered him, and he's in North Carolina. And I think we are defining ourselves, and men who are orienting themselves around the goddess and sacred femininity are creating their own terminology. So it's not like something that you're going to find in a dictionary. You know, it's more a state of being that's being defined as time moves on. And there are ancient references, you know, in terms of men being lunar gods and things like that. But nothing very, very specific or specific sites of study. You know, it's you have to sort of search around to see and literally attract it to yourself. Because once you start to desire certain knowledge, you will attract it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling. All right. Say who?
Yes,
I wanted
ma'am.
To ask you about why are some brothers scared of the rise of the divine feminine? And I have some other questions, but I'll start there. Why are some brothers scared of what they see happening or what they know will happen with the rise of the divine feminine?
I think there are several reasons for that. I think similar to what we experienced here in North America under Chattel slavery, there's always the fear of the oppressor, that once the oppressed is emancipated and fully cognizant of themselves, that they will turn around and they will do to them what's been done. And I think also that there is this fear that men have of losing control of things. It's very clear that the women are very, very much brilliant, very very capable and adept and able to pursue any particular course of study, career, whatever that they want to. Some of what patriarchy has afforded men for many years with this whole idea of the white goddess, the constantly and perpetually pregnant but virgin mother, you understand, even though they go and they look for the lady of the evening to indulge their pleasures in, what it has afforded them is this ability to keep women's mobility fixed. You know, to keep the woman at home barefoot and pregnant was, you know, the basic concept and the idea of patriarchy. It perpetuates that white goddess principle. It doesn't see her as being independent, individual, and free because there is this fear that she, you know, she's viewed as his property, will somehow not choose him or not want to continue to stay with him. So a lot of men are just basically, they're afraid of this idea that a woman won't choose to stay or that, you know, she'll get these very, rejection, get these very independent ideas that don't include her. When women gave over the foundations of marriage, which they, you know, originally created, for instance, when they gave over the control of that to be based upon, you know, the breadwinner concept, they gave over a lot of control, not just over their sex, but their mobility. And so, you know, when women start to move and to do things, stuff happens. You know, women have been some of the major doers of things in our history, without which the basic things that we know to be the comforts of what it is to be civilized, the benefits of what it is to actually be, you know, a people, structured, organized, and progressive, you know, those things have been what men had feared, that, you know, the direction of things would take another turn.
Talk a little bit, honey, about Barbara G. Walker, who's an author of Mysteries of the Dark Moon. And the
That's Barbara G. Walker's Women's Encyclopedia.
Oh, I mean, Demetra George, sorry.
Uh-huh.
And in her book, how she connects the deep, deep embedded subconscious state around the goddess of death in connection to death and the unknown.
Yes.
You know, and them having come out of the depths of darkness via the primordial womb first and then our physical womb. And the ego fight to separate itself and make it unto itself, you know, its own creation. The psychological connection to this, too, that predates a lot of what we see.
It's written in our biology. I mentioned it earlier when I said that the whole process of maleness begins. There's this kind of egoism, this, you know, I am not that, I am this thing over here that pops up with the male psyche as well as the male biology. And it's not to say that it is necessarily a bad thing or an evil thing in and of itself, but it must be rightly directed. It must be understood in depth that, you know, this idea of our identification, the I, you know, as opposed to the other, can have a logical end, which leads to the realization that we are all interconnected.
And one.
Or it can lead to, or appear to lead to, if it stops short and it stagnates, that there are all these separate different things. And men see themselves as being something other than women, and that's the root of the problem. If you say to a man, you know, as a man, as I have, that I'm in touch with my feminine self, some men, you should see the excruciating look of pain that comes over their face. I've had men beg me not to say that, and it's because they don't identify with that aspect of themselves, and so they have, at the root of that, this fear. Part of the fear is that there is this obliteration of separateness, and it's given in the analogy of death, the cessation of being this particular form that lived and breathed and walked and functioned in a particular way and had a particular identity. In the arms of the goddess, you have to release yourself of these gender identifications because we are an expression of both. This idea that we are separate from the animal and plant life, which is speciesism, another way of separating. The best way that I can describe it is that there is a way of masculine thinking that they call left brain thinking, which divides things infinitely and makes all these distinctions between, you know, one thing and another. When in truth, and I give this analogy, you know, and Jennifer said it earlier, that, you know, goddess-centered thinking is that the circle is unbroken. You know, it's a wheel. It's a beginning and an ending that can't be discerned one from the other. Be it in alchemy as the serpent swallowing its tail, serpent being a very old image of the goddess. In the male-dominated thinking, the circle is like a pie that you divvy up. You know, you cut it in half, and you cut it in half again, then into eighths and sixteenths and 64ths and, you know, 122nds. Ad infinitum. But what happens in this process, this infinite dividing of the circle, is that you end up filling it in. If you were to sit down and actually draw this out, divide the circle infinitely, you'd end up with a black circle, which is really the circle that you had in the first place, only filled in. So our evolution is going to eventually, because that's just the nature of things. You know, masculinist left brain thinking is eventually going to get to this point, but it's going to take a longer time. If we can get these brothers to embrace their feminine half, then we can speed the process up.
How does a man find himself and connect with the divine feminine?
Well, you know, the things we teach by way of meditation techniques are, you know, designed, and they have been since time immemorial. The sitting down and the slowing down of the breath, the silencing of the chatter in the head, which is something that happens analogous to that, leads to the intuitive nature of the self coming to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And just spreading itself like those beautiful wings that you see in the goddesses, you know, Aset and Nephthet around Osiris sitting on the throne, those old Egyptian pictures. You know, that is what it is.
To know thyself, you must go internal. You must go inside.
And if where you began is the divine feminine, you're going to find it if you go there.
Mm-hmm. Demetra George connects the schism around fear that men has in connection to the feminine and death. What they did, they forgot that she's not just the goddess of birth and death. They left off the rebirth and dwell in the death portion. And so to revisit, to go inside is like a dying. But after the death, there is always rebirth, and that's been forgotten. And she also said that the fear of the darkness of the primordial state has translated over into other things, fear of the dark inside your room, fear of dark people on the planet. And so it's really a schism that has to be undone, like he said, from a very, very internal work to very distinct, ancient spiritual discipline that you practice.
All right. We have a caller on the switchboard with a question. Caller area code 111, a private caller. Could you let us know who you are and where you're calling from?
Hep-chep, Chalutra. And, you know, I just wanted to, since we're talking about the male and the female, you know, the genders, the thing about that, right, is that the whole concept of masculine and feminine has been indoctrinated into the minds of people in the wrong way. So a lot of male and females don't understand the whole gender of feminine and dominant, or masculine and feminine. And it's never been like a ego thing at all. So to really get into the comprehension of the genders, and you have to get into the comprehension of the genders because it is a universal vibration that comes from the black body radiation. This is what gives us the electromagnetic energy that comes into our melanin and gives us life, breath, and thought, and strength, and health. So when this comes in, it comes in two ways, feminine and masculine. So that's in every body and every breath that we all take. So when we know how to take these breaths, see, our consciousness has been shifted from our true way of thought and our true approach in life. And it was shifted because when you make certain breath patterns, like the queen was saying, the Sitra was saying, the daughter of the creator was saying, when you make certain breath patterns and you make them the proper way, you begin to open up your visual field before you. And then you see your vortex. You see the lines and the numbers that brought you into creation. Think. All of us were horizontal and vertical lines when we came into creation. And when you see these lines, this vortex, now you lose trust in appearances and you know the real. So now what is the real? This is what people don't want to embrace. The real is what they hit from every face. What they hit from every face. Think. You ask the average person, what is their birthday? And they're going to tell you the day of their earth day, not their birthday. They're not going to go back to the 9 months. They're not going to remember this because it was eradicated. Why was it eradicated? When you were 6 months in the fetus, pathways were being lined out in your brain. And at 7 months in the fetus, your eyes opened and you started intaking the seven spectrums of light, the seven forms of energy on the life, the seven forms of life. This is what makes us man, king, and God, woman, queen, and goddess. Many gods and goddesses, one creator.
All right. Did you have a question for the guests that are on the air right now?
No, I just was sharing a thought.
Okay. All right. Well, we definitely appreciate you sharing that with us. Thank you for calling. We do have another caller on the line as well. Area code 513. Is this Pastor Flowers? All right. Let me try to open up her line again. Area code 513.
This is her.
All right. Thank you for calling, Pastor Flowers, and thank you so much for posting the video of Say Who up, because a lot of us had not heard of him before you posted the video up.
Yeah. When I seen him, I was like, I got to get him. Because it was such a balance. And what he was just really, it was a real spirit. He was moving in the spirit, and it was very, he was a man. But it was filled with love. And that's the one thing that you can identify mother with is that love. And he had it. And I seen this when I looked at the video. I knew about your grandmother and all of this, your great-great-grandmother. And I just knew you. And I said, well, because I'm kind of sort of particular. I want people to read everything because in reading everything, that's how you gain a balance. But we weren't supposed to be this different. We didn't make the male to be separate from us like
right.
things have occurred.
And yeah.
So I was just really impressed. But I only seen you. Now I see the other half of you with
yes.
your beautiful queen.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, this is where we need
success.
To be. This is where we need to be. You know, we need to, you know, we can't fight. You know, I've never wanted a war with man. I mean, when
That's
you
right.
birth it, when you push it, a male child from your womb, you love them. That's all.
Yes.
That's all. And so
mm-hmm.
I don't want the war. I couldn't understand coming up as a kid. This thing where a man could do this, but I couldn't do this. And I was pretty much raised by my father and brother to do the same things they did. And so I didn't know any difference because that's
right.
where my house, that's the where my mother was, everybody in that house was the same. I didn't understand this gender thing, you know, where we're fighting, you know. I just, you know, he was me and I was him. I thought that's the way it went. But it's
yeah.
a good thing to see a dream in volition, to see you and your queen. And hopefully, I really enjoyed her explanation about polygamy, polygyny, whatever. I love the fact of free.
Yes, yes.
Free.
Yes.
You know. And what it is you're looking at the beauty that you see
mm-hmm.
in yourself, and you're complimenting the beauty in the mirror of someone else.
Yes. Yes.
And it's such a beautiful experience, you know, if we all could live like that, you know. There's many, you know, when you think about the mother being androgynous, and I tell many people, we're so homophobic in this 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
Many people don't want to accept, but if she was androgynous, I mean, she might have had a male that had all estrogen and progesterone predominant.
Right.
You
yeah.
see?
Yeah.
So there was never any, it wasn't two genders. It wasn't a thing about gender.
No,
right.
you know,
you just love people. That's it right there.
Yeah, you love them, and we must get back to this, or we're going to have to really start over. Unfortunately, we are.
All right. Yes. I do want to bring in another caller briefly. Area code 478. Is this the Goddess Network?
Yes, this is the Goddess Network. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Goddess Network.
Hey, everybody. I'm just so in love with you all. I just am.
We love you too.
And I'm so grateful too for Pastor Flowers. She's just a elder full of wealthy knowledge anyway, but I'm so grateful for her because she put your stuff up, and I'm a big proponent for the divine feminine. And when I saw this masculine going like, who is he? And
right?
I reached out to him, and what to me was just so humbling is because when I reached out, because in the video clip, he speaks of Jennifer, but I didn't know there were a couple. So I emailed Goddess her story, and she gave me Brother Sahu email address, and I still didn't know that there were a couple. But when I emailed Brother Sahu, and this is what is just so magnificent to me about you all and why I think y'all are just wonderful examples for the Great Mother and the Divine, like the Elder just said, the wonderful twins, is because when I asked you to do the show, Brother, you said, yes, my partner and I. So many brothers, you don't know who they women are.
Amen.
You don't know who their women are.
Wow.
They do not incorporate their women in their teachings or nothing. I've seen many brothers teach on femininity, but you don't know who their woman is. And I honor you as a sacred male because you did that, You said, my partner and I, yes, my partner and I would love to do the interview. So I thank you, brother, and for repping the divine masculine. I definitely thank the sister goddess for repping the divine feminine, and I just love how you all bring it together. And I'm just so grateful that the great mother raised y'all up. I'm just happy. I'm just elated.
You know what I was interested in is Brother Sarut, who when he was talking about how he had been in other relationships and the women mistreated him and took advantage of him. And see, even through that, there had to be much love in this young man. I mean, he had to get this from home.
Yes.
And he was able to understand how to be still. And even though he had to lick his wounds, he took responsibility and he began to say, well, why does she do me like that? But he didn't do it in a vengeful way. He began to try to understand what she might have had to go through that made her be the way she is. And that, when I seen that in him, but see, I seen that when I seen your picture.
I
was just like, I got to put him on the site.
You did, and I'm glad you did it. And Sister Jennifer, I just love the way that you really are because see, I'm kind of a loud, a warrior's type, but you're a warrior's type. But you got a different speech going on, and I love how you speak with conviction, and especially as regards to women and walking this, and not just talking it and walking this. And when I interviewed you, and you said, well, you know, if he brings the sword and lays it down at your feet, what are you going to do with it? And this speaks to what Pastor Fowler was just saying about women, us not being in our divine state to even handle the divine masculine. So I'm just glad that y'all are a couple, that y'all went through some things, but y'all are able to teach us how to balance it out. I just love it. And thank you, Seek, for the call, and I still need my Cali painting, but other than that, blessings to all of you all.
Yes,
ma'am. She's such a sweet sister.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, she is.
I want to give thanks for the both of you coming on to the show today. Much honor and respect.
Thank you for having
me.
Yes. Where are you all located?
We're in Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, give us all of your information, your contact information, website, location, everything.
Can you take this moment?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Emma.
We are actually located physically at 114 Troutman Street. This is in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's Suite 121. That's between Central and Evergreen Avenue.
Y'all moving.
What's that? Yes, we're moving into it this week, but we've been working.
Y'all were moving.
Oh yes, we're moving into this space. It's a dual living and working space. Mm-hmm. We've been working out of it, but haven't moved physically into it yet. We move into it physically this week. So it's
much, we're holding our ritual.
Much is
going to
come out of that.
Yes.
Much.
What's that?
Much is coming out of that.
Oh yes, absolutely.
You have somebody that's going to sponsor you.
Yes. From the oracle's mouth to our ears.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
My. It's a lady in
our website.
Yes. Go ahead.
Look for a lady and a man. Short lady.
I receive that.
Yes.
Our website is www.goddessherstory.com. You can email us at info@goddessherstory.com. And our space is on Facebook, listed as Lakshmi Holistic Art Center. That's the goddess Lakshmi, Lakshmi. And we can be found there, and our numbers are there on the website. And so everything we're doing is there. I'm actually in the process of revamping a newer site, but we're there. We are always looking to connect and share in the work and meet new people, because that's what it's all about. So,
are you pregnant?
We gotta get you. Am I pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm pregnant with all of our objectives.
Beyond
I
that, but pregnant, fixing to be pregnant. You either pregnant or fixing to be pregnant.
Don't say that, don't. As far as I know, Mother, I'm not. I hadn't planned on it.
Might not be, but y'all are pregnant. And then I'm not I know you're pregnant with the work, but I'm talking mm-hmm. about a real live baby.
Oh, goodness. Oh,
and
goodness.
Possible twins in it.
Oh, don't say that.
Because it runs in, is it in your family, Sahut?
Yes, it's in my family.
Oh,
right.
Don't say. I'm going to tell you why, because my girls are all grown now, and we have one of his sons with us.
Yeah, but you had them early. You had them early. That's okay.
I did. I thought that I was finished.
She going to be like a Sarah.
Oh, goodness. And you know what's funny?
I got a tribe coming.
My astrological.
Because, see, once the love comes in, the love reproduces. And, see, it can't. That's what it does. You can't stop
it.
I
know.
And the love is
there.
And
you know what? What's funny is that we made an agreement in our relationship.
It's in your eyes.
We don't even talk about baby. We don't even talk about it because we know that the love and passion and power will reproduce for us very quickly.
Because that's what love is.
We don't even discuss it. It's like, okay, don't talk about that.
Don't have to. Because that's what love is.
Yes,
that's what love is.
Wow.
A tribe.
Like
comes.
I said, I definitely want to thank y'all.
Big old brown
on.
Stone. Did you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Y'all going to need a big old brown stone.
Oh, goodness. Sister Tara.
But that's what we need.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
That's what we need. You see, two people, we've gotten out of the point that we don't desire children anymore for the right reasons.
But Mother, I'm 42 now.
It don't matter. My mother had me at 50.
Oh.
Ooh.
Wow.
Don't tell me nothing. She told me, and my mother told me, and she didn't like old men either. And so when my father passed away, I'm in the car saying, he can't possibly be my father. And she said, I don't know why the hell not. I didn't like that man. He was 18 years younger than her.
Oh,
all right,
God, it's after my whole heart.
Pastor Flowers.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to end the show for now, but we will definitely have them back because, I mean,
must.
This is the information.
Must.
That you and that Jennifer and Sahu have imparted on us today is wow. Definitely want to thank you for the work that the two of you have put in and what you have done in the past and what you continue to do. So I definitely would like to have you guys back at a later time. Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, we'd love to be back. And thank you for the work that you're doing.
Yes.
We are so appreciative of it and so appreciative of being included. So thank you, and we look forward to definitely connecting again.
All right. All right. Peace and blessings, and thanks to everyone who listened to the show live or in archives. Again, Black Womaniverse can be reached at blackwomaniverse.webs.com. We also have a social networking site, which is blackwomenshealth.ning.com. Our phone number is 1-877-522-2653, extension 5, and our email address is blackwomb@divinechemistry.com, and chemistry is spelled K-H-E-M-E-S-T-R-Y. Peace and blessings.
Blessings.
Bye.
I try.
You in love with me.
You in love with me. I'm in love.